The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning. My name's Bokshu. And today I'm going to continue my series of talks focusing on the four vows, more formally called the four bodhisattva vows, or in Japanese, the Shigu Seigan Mon. The third of the four vows is my subject for today. It reads, Honmun Muryu Seigan Gaku. When I type that into Google Translate, the translation given initially is health checkup. When I take the space out between the words hon and mon, Google's translation changes to no description. I think both of these translations are perfect for this vow. Health checkup, no description. According to Robert Aitken, the literal pre-Google translation of the third vow is Dharma gates, no measure, pledge, vow, learn. And Sotoshu translates this vow as Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Or however immeasurable the Dharma teachings are, I vow to master them all. Here, we say the dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. What is dharma? We use the Sanskrit term because dharma cannot be adequately translated into English. And this is, of course, entirely appropriate since words are inadequate to convey the dharma. Just to depict it in literary form is to relegate it to defilement. So what am I doing now? I'm busy defiling the Dharma. But this is a Dharma talk. So words must be invoked. What a pity that you are bearing witness to my crabbed expression of the Dharma. But because I'm quite shameless, I'll now attempt to speak about this boundless Dharma that is the subject of the third great vow. I'd like to begin by asking, what are words? Words are not Dharma. But if you see all speech as words, you're missing something important. If you see speech as existent or non-existent, you're cut off from Dharma. How do you see it? What are words, and what is hearing words? Yuan Wu quoted an ancient teacher's words, "The path is fundamentally without words. We use words to reveal the path. Therefore, the essential point in testing others is to know them intimately the minute they open their mouths." Zenkei Shimayama expresses it this way, "With silence or no words, only a quality, which is half of reality, can be expressed, while with speaking or words, only differentiation, the other half of reality, can be expressed. A Zen man should be firmly based on absolute reality, which transcends equality and differentiation. Unless he is capable of making free use of speaking and silence without committing himself to equality or differentiation, he is not worthy to be called a Zen man. I leave it to others to waste their time inquiring into whether I am or I am not a Zen man. better to go shopping at Uniqlo or Tiffany's, just to make sure you use absolute reality while you're shopping. The term Dharma has been variously translated in English as the truth, the law, the teachings. Personally, I prefer the words facts and information. Can we just accept the facts and metabolize information? Our society's capacity to accept facts and metabolize information seems to be more and more limited with each passing day. Wouldn't it be nice if a scientist could invent a kind of insulin that we could inject when reading newspapers and hearing broadcasts of the day's events? But we don't have such an insulin now. And even then, if we had such an insulin, we would have to remember Norman Mailer's famous declaration that facts are nothing without their nuance. The nuance without which facts are nothing is reality. Reality depends on facts, but it is more than the accumulation of facts. Reality is not merely a river into which countless facts flow from leaves, gullies, and ditches, accumulating into one great body that is, at its mouth, vanishing into empty space. But this nothing upon which facts depend is itself an inescapable fact. Recently, I was walking through a garden, admiring the spring flowers. While walking, I noticed some other people in the garden with me. And after noticing those people, I noticed that I was looking at the people differently than I was looking at the flowers. I noticed my noticing. And then I realized all these people are flowers. If you entertain the possibility that all people are flowers, and that when the Buddha held up a single flower, he was holding up all of humanity, it might change your day-to-day experience. But don't force yourself to see it that way. If your heart isn't open to seeing flowers, don't see flowers, because if you see flowers when your heart isn't open, you're digging your own grave. It turns out that flowers suffer, and that the root of that suffering is desire, and the root of that desire is thinking, and the thinking consists of creating elaborated perceptions and notions, in the words of the Buddha. So we have to try to stop creating elaborated perceptions and notions if we want to put an end to our desires and save all sentient beings. A moment without our elaborated perceptions and notions saves all sentient beings. A moment beyond thinking is what the four vows are really pointing at. What is this moment beyond thinking like? What is its quality? Recently, I was walking on First Avenue, and I came to a spot on the sidewalk where they were repairing the pavement, so we were kind of directed by these barriers out a little bit into the street. So we had this improvised walkway that we were all using. And as I was passing through this rather narrow channel, coming the other way was an elderly man walking with a cane. And he was kind of shuffling along, making his best way down this improvised walkway. And I wasn't too focused on him. I just happened to see him since he was right there. And just as he was passing, he happened to say, "Suck my dick!" Just like that. And I don't know who he was directing his comment at. There were other people. It could have been me, it could have been them, or it could have been no one at all. He could have just wanted to say it. But without hesitating or turning to look at him, I said, "No, thank you." And that was Dharma. Through and through, that moment was Dharma. But again, Dharma is not conveyed by words. As you listen to my words, or better still, ignore them, is there any Dharma to be had here? Nyogen Senzaki said, "I speak my lectures with shame and tears. I do such a dirty job, this talking on Zen, because nobody else has done it here before me. Please do not show my lectures to any outsiders and say that they are a part of my Zen. I have no such funny business as preaching Zen. Whatever I say passes away before you record it. You only catch my yawns and coughs." On the wall of the Department of Justice, Executive Office for Immigration Review, in a courtroom on the 12th floor of 26 Federal Plaza, there are some words written. "Please turn off all cell phones and pagers while court is in session. Please remain quiet while court is in session. Thank you for your cooperation. Eating, gum chewing, and drinks are not allowed. This is Dharma." Although words cannot convey Dharma, perhaps I can say some words about what is not Dharma. What is not Dharma can accurately portray that which is not Dharma. This is called using the right tool for the job. My opinions and yours are not Dharma. Our ideas about how things should be, about what is right and who is wrong, are not Dharma. If you despise a certain politician and tell yourself that not despising this politician is the Buddhist thing to do, that not despising makes you a better person, you're mountains and rivers away from Dharma. Better to do a proper job hating the politician. And then at least you'll be sincere and you'll be doing a good job of it. You'll be excelling at something. You'll be mountains and rivers away from Dharma, but you'll still be doing a good job. Love is not Dharma. Life is not Dharma. The moment I speak of love and life, I create a loveless, lifeless place. The thing that I create when I speak of love or life may be an entirely different thing for you than it is for me. We all have our individualized responses to things, and those individual responses cause a great deal of suffering. The suffering is not Dharma, nor are the views that cause the suffering, whether fixed or transient, Dharma. We all have our responses to things, and those responses are intimately connected to what we take to be our identity. Your identity may, at some point, have led you to purchase a t-shirt with a slogan on it. Have you seen the t-shirt emblazoned with the slogan, "Love sucks"? I've seen that t-shirt around. I've also seen t-shirts around that have "Love is the answer" emblazoned on them. Fundamentally, these t-shirts are not different. What's the question that love answers? Is there something you want to know? I wish people would stop declaring their love for humanity with a straight face. Is "love is the answer" a way of avoiding the questions raised by a world full of hatred and violence? T-shirts are very functional, but their messages may lead you astray when it comes to the Dharma. I used to design t-shirts. Very artsy, high quality cotton. They didn't sell. So take it from me, the t-shirts are not Dharma. Since we all have our responses to things, the thing that can help us to realize our inherent unity, to see the fundamental ground of reality, amidst the scenery of our differentiation, is to not create a thing so that our responses can't separate us. If we stop creating things and separating from them, we'll be well on the way to saving all sentient beings. We'll be on the Dharma path. So in the vow, there's this word, master. I vow to master the boundless Dharma. What's that about? If you master something, you become highly proficient at it, maybe even more than highly proficient. It seems to say, this word, master, that you have nowhere to go, nothing to do, you've made it. It also sounds a little S&M, like I'm the master and reality is the slave. In fact, in our day-to-day thinking, this is often the case, isn't it? We think our minds are the master of reality and that facts and circumstances are simply going to bend themselves to our will. As soon as something we don't like happens, we often have this reaction of, no, it can't be that way. I'm in control, and it's not that way. We can't even see what's happening. We deny reality and create something different to show that we're the master, not my president, just to pick one random example. Yeah, not my president. We set ourselves up in opposition to reality. Needless to say, that isn't Dharma, much less mastery of Dharma. When my mother died last June, I wanted to have a memorial service for her. And I wanted that service to be open to anyone who was living in the senior community where she had lived. So I asked the community to set up a room and to make a little poster letting people know that there would be this event. And when I got the draft of the poster, it called the ceremony a celebration of life, to which I replied, I don't want it to be called a celebration of life. It's a memorial service. The woman said, but that's what we always call it. We always call it a celebration of life. And I said, no, this is a memorial service. And because I was the master of ceremonies, I got what I wanted. I wanted the event to be called what it was in my mind, to my way of thinking. Was that Dharma? Was I mastering something by striking the more palatable celebration of life and putting memorial service in its place? In a world where people routinely die on the streets of hunger and have no shelter, in a country where our leaders gleefully lie with abandon and treat asylum seekers like cattle, in a senior community where residents are, in essence, waiting to die, I thought it was the height of irony to be calling that event a celebration of life. Be that as it may, not one person from the community attended the event. The few people that were there were all non-residents, outsiders. If I had let them call it a celebration of life, would the elderly residents have flocked in instead of avoiding the event? Even if they had come to the celebration, they would have known that they were there because my mother had died, and they were scheduled to follow her shortly thereafter. They would have seen me crying as I hid behind my mother's portrait while playing a song by Ray Charles that she would have despised. What is life? What is truth? What is reality? What am I? We're all going to follow my mother's example very soon. So let's not waste another moment trying to answer these questions. Let's live these questions continuously. There is no such thing as life to celebrate. There is only the universal, continuous practice of living. There is no such thing as truth. Although the sight of a cat on the pavement with its guts hanging out reminds us to be careful crossing the road. There is no I. There is no you. Much less an I versus you or an us against them. What is the mastery in any of this? To be addicted to our views is not dharma, even when our addiction seems to get us closer to the truth. To insist on the truth does not get us closer to the truth. Reality doesn't need us to prop it up or to expose it. Nothing is hidden. So how do we skip the S&M routine and master the boundless dharmas? Try the following experiment. When the garbage can is full, take the garbage out and put a fresh bag in the can. Don't grumble about the fact that you're doing it and no one else is doing it. Don't get annoyed about the fact that it contains recyclables or that somebody's put a glass full of liquid into it or that it's dripping all over the floor and so on and so forth. Just take out the garbage, period. In every sense, take it out. This is functional, but to call it an activity or a good thing is a distortion, a defilement. It's not anything at all. When the garbage can is full, you take out the garbage. You don't master the garbage any more than you master the dharmas. There is nothing going on. There's absolutely no story to it. A bag with stuff was moved, and a bag without stuff was put in its place. What I'm saying is, don't do what I've done. Don't make the same mistakes as I have. Save yourself some time, for God's sake. Make yourselves the master of your own mistakes. Washing a plate, paying the electric bill, giving a Sangha mate a hug. When we do these, we can just do them without embellishment, without opinion, nothing added on. When we hold our tongue in a tense situation, when we pick up trash on the street, when we don't cut someone off on the New Jersey Turnpike, we can just not do or do. And when we just do or don't do, those things, if they are things, are dharma. We have mastered the boundless dharmas. This is what Linji meant, I think, when he said, the way I see it, there's no call for anything special. Just act ordinary, put on your clothes, eat your rice, and pass the time doing nothing. Pass the time doing nothing. Well, I can guarantee you they were plenty busy in those monasteries, but they were passing the time doing nothing. Linji also said, I don't have a particle of dharma to give to anyone. All I have is cure for sickness, freedom from bondage. You followers of the way from here and there, try coming to me without depending on anything. I would like to do some testing with you, but for 10 years, for 5 seasons, there's never been one such person. All I get are things stuck to stems, clinging to leaves, wraiths that inhabit bamboo or trees, wild fox spirits. They chew away frantically at every lump of shit they happen upon. Blind fools, I tell you, there's no Buddha, no Dharma, no practice, no enlightenment. Yet you go off on side roads trying to find something. Will you put another head on top of the one you have? What is it you lack? We can pass the time doing nothing. saying nothing, lacking nothing. We can pass the time saving all sentient beings, mastering the boundless dharmas. I'll close by offering the last poem by the beggar and monk Daito Kokushi, because I think it somehow resonates with this mastering of all dharmas. Buddhas and fathers cut to pieces. The sword is ever kept sharpened. Where the wheel turns, the void gnashes its teeth. And let's now say the four vows.